Welcome into the BBP2 in our second Inquirer Bengals podcast of the week. Every Thursday during the season, we'll bring you more specific game preview insight from players and your Cincinnati.com beat writers. But that's only the beginning. Every week, we'll bring you Paul Dougherty's hot seat with our guest on Beyond the Stripes, our advanced analytics conversation with the team at Pro Football Focus, as well as a Throwback Thursday interview with a voice from Bengals past. All right, let's go. All right, welcome in to the Deuce. The BBP2 is here for you. Paul Dougherty Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers for Cincinnati.com and the Cincinnati Enquirer. Happy Thursday to you.
Yeah. Spending indoors today.
It is cold.
Yeah.
Bengals go bubble today.
Yeah, had to go to the bubble.
Which this happens every year, the first time the Bengals go to the bubble, which over the last few weeks of every season, they'll go up there once or twice.
Yeah.
Depending on the weather. And so you got to get it the first bubble trip out of the way. Tweet out the Bengals are going to the bubble. Let everybody get it out of their system. Bengals need a practice facility. They need a bubble. Why don't they have a bubble? Bubble.
It's such a ridiculous thing to get mad about.
Well, you know, do I think that they should have an indoor practice facility? Absolutely. Is it crazy that they go to a college campus because they have better facilities than the pro football team? Absolutely. Who cares anymore, though? Like, to me, it's just such a played out topic.
Yeah.
That it's just the way they feel. They've felt this way about it for a decade plus. Since it's been really been brought up since Marvin's been here, it's just not something that's going to happen. Now they feel they've got a nice little cozy arrangement where all these millionaire players get on a bus and head up to Clifton and go to their bubble.
You know what? It's like going back to your roots for the love of the game.
That is
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For Kevin Huber.
Yeah, for Kevin Huber, right.
You know, he's the only one going back to his roots over there. But, you know, I get it. You know, it's a pretty cheap thing. But it's a philosophy they have that they should practice where in the environment that they're playing in. And that just means a lot of times you'll have guys that are kind of sick in the most important games of the season. it's just part of the deal around here.
Yeah. What, but, yeah. Let me put it this way. That doesn't avoid things. There was a I'll never forget this, Paul. There was a flu bug or something went around the Packers locker room. And they have a very nice indoor facility, Hudson Center. It doesn't matter. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that, like, you're around each other so much. It's like going, taking your kids to preschool. You know, like, your kid's getting sick, and then you're getting sick.
That's what happens.
Yeah. The thing I liked most about the bubble was being able to pull out, like, bad bubble boy jokes, like the moops.
Oh, yeah. Moors.
Yeah. It says moops.
No, I'm sorry. It says moops. A bubble boy?
Exactly.
A bubble boy.
I mean, you know.
He lives in a bubble.
Yeah.
Boy. It is a great episode.
It is.
That is a great Seinfeld episode, which I got a Seinfeld crack in on the walkthrough this morning, talking about I was trying to give people a link to help people quickly find some gifts. Well, you could always just donate to the Human Fund.
Yeah, that's true.
Money for people.
Yeah. Did you put your routing number on there? So
I need
the PDJ Human Fund.
For my own personal Human Fund. All right, enough Seinfeld. Is Festivus over yet? Or it's about to start.
I think we've got a good stretch of Festivus pole wrestling coming up.
Yeah, got to get the pole out of the crawl space. Well, you know, I think I'm pretty sure that like TBS is running the Festivus episode every day next week, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It is a great one, though. It's a Festivus miracle. All right. So, speaking of Festivus miracles, the Bengals are going to try to beat the Steelers.
Yeah.
The Steelers are 8-5, and they're really rounding into form.
Yeah.
Rather than just talking about how good the Steelers are, I don't think it's a secret. Le'Veon Bell went bonkers against the Bills and outgained them by himself. Yeah. He's on pace to – he has the most yards through the first 10 games of a season for a player, for yards from scrimmage, ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
It's amazing.
Anyone. He's gone over 100 on the ground the last 4 weeks, and they just keep – giving it to him. They don't even care. So that's working. Ben hasn't been playing as well.
Right.
But
Bell has really been making it work for him. What does this game mean to the Bengals?
Well, I guess it's the closest thing they got to a playoff game. I mean, they're still hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
You outline the very slim and strange playoff chances that they have. It, you know, they, and part of it focuses on them winning out. So, you know, we've talked about this for the last 3 weeks now. I mean, they're hanging on to it, and it's worked out the last 2 weeks, obviously against inferior opponents. So, you know, I'd imagine this is their biggest game left of the year. I mean, Baltimore's fine, you know, but, I mean, it's the Steelers coming to Paul Brown.
Yeah.
And everybody's healthy except for A.J. Green. But, you know, like the you know.
For the most part, they're
healthy. Guys.
They're healthy enough.
You know, yeah.
The guys that will be here next year are healthy in Green, obviously.
Yeah.
We're not saying Green's not going to be here. But the guys that are going to need to be a part of this turnaround are that are in this locker room right now are healthy and are going to be playing against the best team that they have on the back end of their schedule. We've talked about this. Many people have talked about this. People love to talk about this. It's all true.
Yeah.
This team against teams that finished with a winning record. Not teams that had a winning record at the time because, you know, teams can be 2-1 or whatever.
Right.
At the end of the season, finish with a winning record or currently have a winning record. In their last 13, counting the playoff game, 1-11-1.
Yeah.
I mean, you think you just luck into a game at some point.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, they lucked into the Dolphins game. The Dolphins may still not end up the season with a winning record.
Right.
And they were a complete mess of injury at the time.
Right.
You on a Thursday. I mean, you could almost cross that one out as the one win.
Yeah.
On that. I mean, it started with the game that broke their 8-0 streak last year,
right,
against Houston. Lost 10-6. They lose it at Arizona by 3. They lose in the first game the Steelers where Dalton gets hurt. They lose in Denver on Monday Night Football. They lose the playoff game. They lose the first game in Pittsburgh this year. Denver comes to town and whoops them. The win over Miami. Get hammered in Dallas. Hammered in New England. A tie against a very mediocre Washington,
yeah,
team. Lose to the Giants. Lose at Baltimore. I mean, these are all games where there's no excuses.
Right.
Except that's got to change. If this team is talking about the future and this team is talking about what they're going to be and turning it around for next year, it sure would be nice to go into next year with a win like what Sunday could be under your belt to just to stem that tidal wave.
Right. Which is interesting because at the start of last year, which wasn't that long ago, I mean, they came back and beat a Seattle team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kansas City at the time you thought was what, but then they rattled off 11 straight wins shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they beat Pittsburgh early. I mean, so yep, when they were at the top of their game a year ago, it, you know, heading into that weeknight game against Houston, which it was funny, Paul, because at the time Houston was terrible. Like, that's the game that started Houston on their run to the playoffs.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess I'll rewind it to that game to put it to this week, Paul, where maybe, you know, it's the game where you're looking at the Bengals like the Texans were, struggling, offense can't score, defense is or not as good as it should be, and then the Bengals weren't they like the top 2 or 3 offense at that point?
Yeah.
Andy Dalton and MVP conversation, that was the worst game of the year at home, all that stuff, so you know, you're right. You'd think in the 13 games between then and now, they would have gotten one of them.
Yeah.
The tie and the 1-point loss in New York and all that stuff. So I guess, you know, they've seen it. They beat that Chiefs team. They beat that. They lost to the Houston team. So, you know, you can – these games, to your point, these games, if you win it or do it right, I guess it can kind of lead you. They might win out then if they win Sunday. Fulfill the goal.
Yeah, and all three of these teams could end up with winning records.
Right.
You could kind of shake that.
Right.
And there's part of that. Off seasons get long when you keep losing games.
Oh,
like this.
Oh yeah,
they get long for fans. They get long for people trying to sell season tickets. They get long for players.
Yeah,
and they get negative for players if there isn't some sort of hope delivered, and that involves beating good teams. This is, you know, like you said, we talk about Houston, Baltimore, but this is really the last chance to do it.
And a lot of people point to this stretch as a reason why they're 0-7 in Marvin's playoff career.
Right.
You know, because they're like, well, if you can't – it does remind me a lot of the baseball team that wins 93 games because, you know, they beat the crap out of all the garbage around, and then they were like 500, and then they get to the first round and get swept by three games. Mm-hmm. Because they finally ran into, like, A, good teams and good – you know, so I get that argument. It's – people – I don't know about you. People ask me, why don't you ask Marvin why they can't – they don't know.
Yeah, they don't know.
I mean, honestly – it's a game, then, that they weren't better. Usually is what that means.
It is.
Right?
It is.
Which kind of sucks when you're, you know, 11-5 and losing the first round, but sometimes you're just not the better team. I don't know. I guess we'll find out, right? I mean, you can win any one game.
Yeah.
To your point, again, you'd think they would have got one of those.
You'd think you would just get lucky.
Right.
So as far as this game goes, I think it comes down to if this Bengals defense that we've talked a bit about, a resurgence in the second half of the season, can really do it and can slow the run game. And I don't know if they can. Because that's the one thing, even though they've played better and they've allowed fewer points, teams have still been able to run it when they've wanted to. I mean, even the Browns.
Yeah.
Isaiah Crowell went for over 100 last week. So what's Le'Veon Bell going to be able to do?
Yeah, that's it's interesting, Paul, because they've had good success. We'll say good, considering who it is with Antonio Brown of late.
Yeah.
They've kind of figured that out. What helps is the guys across from them aren't really worth a whole lot of anything. You know, Martavis Bryant suspension. You know, Ladarius Green will be interesting. You know, tight ends really killed this team early in the year. They've gotten a little better, but, you know, he's a good player. But
Cody
Bell,
Hamilton?
Yeah, right.
Marcus Wheaton. He's catching passes.
Eli Rogers is a nice little player possession guy. But Bell is it. Honestly, there's like one guy. I mean, it's Vontaze. Mm-hmm. There's one guy that can handle that. There's one guy who can go sideline to sideline.
He can't. Yeah, and he can't miss tackles. No, I mean, nobody. When we bring in the PFF guys here in a bit, we talked about Le'Veon Bell this week and his numbers and missed tackles created and elusivity and all those things. He's just as good as anybody at getting in there, picking and exploding and making a guy miss. And if you're the Bengals, they run that counter to get a linebacker one-on-one.
Right.
And let Bell make one move and go. And Burfict can't miss tackles. He hasn't much of late, but he can't. And that's going to be what – honestly, that's going to be the most fun thing to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, past history aside, I mean, those are the two best players right now on each of those respective units. And really, I mean, Carlos Dansby's just slow. And Vinny's a nice – plug-and-play type of guy. I mean, I don't know if his thumb will be a little better this week. It's been bothering him since Philly. You know, 55 has to play his best game of the year. And I'm not saying it's not totally impossible.
No.
The dude's been getting better, and this is the type of situation where, you know, you could really see him push the envelope and be – I mean, look, even before Bell tore his knee – remember that first game back, the two straight tackles for loss?
Mm-hmm.
He's capable.
Yeah. The other side of this is the Steelers' defense has started to play better, and that's really been what's got them going as a team. They've started to figure some they've started to see some development from guys that they plugged into the system within the last couple years. This is what we're talking about with the Steelers' defense is what we were talking about that the Bengals team has been missing this year. And that was the young guys taking the step and filling in, whether you're talking about, you know, Ryan Shazier was a major player last year, but he's taken to another level. Bud Dupree is starting to really have an effect. Ross Cockrell has really stepped up. Artie Burns has stepped up. This is their first-round pick this year, who was picked right after William Jackson III as a starting corner now. Stephon Tuitt has started to be very disruptive, you know, in his early parts of his career. those past drafts are starting to pay off for them defensively, because they, you know, a couple of years ago they gutted the age.
Yeah.
And they brought in a bunch of kids, and they've struggled to stop people the previous 2 years. And now I think the tide is starting to turn for them. And if you're a Bengals coach, I don't know how you don't sit there and watch that and say, God, that's what we need right now. That's what we needed this year,
right,
was a flood of like 3 to 4 guys that were in their first or second year that, boom, came on and helped save you.
Right. What I'm curious to see, well, along those lines, I guess the one area, and we've talked a lot about this last week, you wrote about this, the one area where the Bengals have seen some development is with the receivers. And if you remember back in week 2, after A.J., you know, sunk Grievous Island, Pittsburgh took him away. And they tried to go to C.J. Uzomah, who couldn't catch a touchdown. And Tyler Boyd fumbled. And it was Giovanni Bernard getting him down the field until that point. Well, now, I don't really think A.J. Green's going to play. So what does that mean? That means Tyler Eifert has a lot of attention. Hello, Mike Mitchell. And but Andy trusts those guys. And I guess I'm curious to see that change. I don't really think the Bengals are going to be able to run the ball. They haven't been able to do it against anyone against other than Cleveland. But, you know, I'm curious to see how that passing attack works. Because, yeah, you know, they've been able to do that against the Steelers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've been able to find mismatches out right there for sure. So we'll see if they can do that. Yeah. So the question is, who's going to get hurt? Right?
Yeah, it's happening.
I mean, how many – we talked about this all offseason. These guys got to be like, can you please put this game in a different month than December?
It's like they'd want to play like week 2 and week 8.
In week 8. That way you get you get 2 months to recover from every bone is broken on a key player. Right. I mean, if you're the Steelers, I don't know how you don't go into this game and watch it with one eye half closed.
Right.
The Bengals have ruined their playoff chances the past 2 years because of injury. Whether you're talking about Antonio Brown, whether you're talking about Roethlisberger playing hurt last year, right, whether you're talking about Le'Veon Bell in 2014, and the same can be said for the Bengals. It goes both ways. But this has just happened. December games between these two teams, big-time players get hurt because it's just so damn physical, and I would expect it to be similar on Sunday. We'll see if another blow is.
Yeah, there's going to be guys getting hurt, Paul, and it's Well, one, I mean, that's why this was originally a Sunday night game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that type of intensity. And look, when I went up to Pittsburgh way back in week 2, and the refrain was a little different since 55 wasn't playing, but one of the reasons the guy said that, and I didn't really get into this in the game for that particular story, but one of the reasons they said there it was more physical, more hard-hitting, was because there's no surprises with scheme. There's no, like, or very few. Vontaze Burfict knows Le'Veon Bell's jump cut and what the gap is on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Mitchell knows Tyler Eifert's route, and vice versa with Antonio Brown. I mean, so there's no guessing. There's no sort of, like, that little quarter step of what's he going to do, where's he. It's just full on, I'm know where he's going.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and Rex Burke has said this about Ryan Shazier. He's like, they get there so fast that you don't have time to make a decision in terms of a missed tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just there under your chin.
Yeah, and the Bernard hit is the prime example.
So so you're right. And Andrew Whitworth, there's one of the better things. I remember Andrew last year said this about that game. He's like, we hurt each other.
Yeah,
all the time. And it's just you know, I know. Well, at the end of the game, we'll debate the legalities of it. Maybe rules will be changed.
Yeah.
But you're right, Paul. I think you have to wonder, like, oh,
yeah,
what's coming?
Yeah, and it was only about a year ago when we saw the brawliest football game that I've ever witnessed.
Yeah.
Where you just saw I think the Bengals not quite being in this takes a little bit that element out of this. I think if these two teams were both, if the Bengals were 7-6 like the Ravens are, I would fully expect another bloodbath out there because it's just personal and teams they're sick of it. But with it being the way it is, I don't know that it will get personal and nasty like that as much. But it's not going to be fun. We'll see how it goes. So what do you got? What do you predict?
Yeah, I, you know, Paul, this is one of those. I think I maybe picked three games right all year. And I put a lot of thought into those predictions, and the you know, get screwed. So there's something. There's just something, Paul. I don't know. I'm going to go Bengals 21-20. Look, I'm not going to put this on Nuge, but they are, on average, 2.5 points worse per game this year due to missed kicks. For a team that went through a stretch of close games, I'm assuming Randy Bullock makes his kicks, PATs, and I think for whatever, I don't know, Paul, I think whatever reason, the one drive that they couldn't get at the end of the game and a lot of those close games, they get it this week. So that means I'm sort of assuming Tyler Eifert's healthy the whole game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I think so I'm going to go 21-20. I think the defense does just enough. This team does turn Ben Roethlisberger over. He's thrown a lot of picks of late. You know, there's something in there. Nothing in my head says the Bengals should win at all, let alone be competitive. But I don't know. So I'm going to go with the close win.
Okay. Interesting thing that I kind of looked up this week. We talked so much about it back at the beginning of the year, but I hadn't ever revisited it. If you extrapolate it out without Eifert, Bengals red zone offense, 42%, which would rank them 31st, only one team worse than them. The weeks since, 62%, yes, which would rank them 8th.
Right.
If you put that out over the course of a whole season.
And that number's better. I know Baltimore, you can't take games away. Baltimore is the weird anomaly of late for them, where they were 1-for-5.
Yeah.
So I think it's like 70%.
Yeah, it's the only game they weren't at least 500,
right,
at least 50% in since Eifert's been
back. That was the weird Bodine game with the snaps and
the
stuff
fumble,
happening,
which had nothing really to do with Eifert.
Yeah.
You know, actually executing. It was, So I'm just saying, still, even 31st to 8th.
Yeah.
I mean, that, think about what that is. I mean, so 20% of all the times you go into the red zone, 20% more, you're getting four extra points.
Yeah,
that's a lot of points, and that's the factor. We talked about it then, and it's proven itself out. Pittsburgh, though, number two in red zone defense in the league, and I think that's going to be a difference. This offense, too often, when those types of things have confronted them, haven't been able to find a way around, particularly that A.J. Green, I think it's going to be a problem. 26-16 Steelers is mine. I think Le'Veon Bell goes for about 160.
Yeah, he's going to have a good day regardless.
He's going to have a good day. I did think they're going to have trouble with him. All right, that wraps it up for us on the BBP2. Going to bring you our next three segments. Of course, PFF talking about Le'Veon Bell, so you get there. The insight on some of their numbers. Then treat for you this week. Look out for the game day section on Sunday, and of course launching online on Friday with all kinds of video content. It's really cool. There's a story on the behind the scenes of Dave Lapham and Dan Horde.
Yeah, really.
All cool. They do during the course of a week, and sort of what they mean to this franchise and in sort of the new media world, and just how. Everything what they do. And it's really a lot of fun. I got to rode around with Lapham for a little while. Rode with Dan from his house to a UC game. We have a video with the two of them sitting together chatting. That's great. And then of course the story to go with it, which is a lot of fun. A lot of good stuff in there. But yeah, check that out over the game day section online on Friday. I have the full sit down. It's about a 10-minute sit down with myself, Lap, and Dan. That was fairly entertaining. I'm going to run for you here, and then we'll have our second segment from BTS this week, which was with Drake Kirkpatrick, which was really interesting. One of my favorite quotes from a BTS this year, which was Drake Kirkpatrick talking about how I asked him if he's curious or anxious about free agency, and he just said, "I'm scared." And then went on to talk about why he's scared about the concept of going into free agency. And I just thought it was really candid.
Yeah.
And it's the first
time he's talked about it since the team did not extend him in the offseason. Yeah.
And he called me Charlemagne to God.
Yep.
Because he doesn't know. I think so. Because he says, "You never know what's going to come out of my mouth." I'll take that. We need to go back and revisit the tape, see if I actually should have won that game. Apparently, I didn't give myself a point at some point.
I should have won. I feel bad because
I know.
Brandon LaFell, check the tape.
Check the tape. I in the sky don't lie. Really got it. We really need a board and someone to keep score in a bad way. No one cares about our cheap production anymore. All right. Anyway, we're out of here. Here comes Pro Football Focus, my sit down with Dan and Lap, and then our second segment from BTS with Drake or Patrick. Have a good one, everybody.
All right, welcome to Bengals in Focus with Pro Football Focus. Paul Eden Jr., Bengals beat writer for Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer. Here at the PFF studios down over the Rhine with Mike Renner, senior analyst for PFF. And this week, the Bengals still technically alive in the playoff picture, so we're going to keep focus on opponent. And one that the Bengals fans are familiar with despising. But when you start talking about Pittsburgh and their offense, one thing Bengals fans aren't used to having to deal with is Le'Veon Bell. The last time he played a full game against the Bengals was way back in 2014 when he went for about 180 yards because there's been injuries. In fact, the Bengals have been one to injure him a couple of times. But guess what? Le'Veon Bell is back after his three-game suspension at the beginning this year, and he has been better than ever this year. What have your numbers been saying about the season that he's been having?
Yeah, he really has been better than ever, and he's carrying that offense more than ever because Ben Roethlisberger, having a bit of a down year, it's fallen on Le'Veon Bell's shoulders, and he's delivered. I mean, he's top. He has fourth in the NFL in missed tackles already. You've got to figure he missed those first three games. He might be number one if he didn't. He's top 10 in elusive rating, averaging 2.9 yards after contact per attempt. That's top 10 as well. Just basically anything they've asked him to do, he's been fantastic at, and you know, no one's really been able to put the clamps on him this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Pittsburgh uses him in a very unique way. And just to run down a few more of the numbers on him, I mean, you're talking about he had that three-game suspension, but he still got over 1,600 total yards from scrimmage yesterday. Last week against Buffalo again, he outgained the Bills.
Yes.
Forget it. Bills don't even compete with him. You know, he's gone four straight weeks where they have given him at least 23 carries, and he's delivered at least over 118 yards. And it's been bigger than that. They are featuring him in a big way, but it's not always in the backfield. He has a lot of receptions as well, and that's a big part of the way they use him. That's really what the Steelers have been showing how they'll use him.
Yeah, and it's not even that he's lining up in the backfield all the time. They use him basically as a receiver a lot of the time. I believe over 15% of his snaps this season have actually come split wide, you know, from the slot or even split wide, you know, on the edge. That's one of the highest rates in the NFL for a starting running back. That's pretty rare, and when he's out there, he basically produces like a wide receiver. I think he's second among all running backs in terms of catches. You know, I think he has 12 broken tackles after the catch. He's just been fantastic, whatever they've asked him to do.
One of the interesting matchups will be Vontaze Burfict, who didn't play in the first game because of suspension, and Le'Veon Bell, who didn't play in the first game of suspension, meeting up and that sort of battle of wits. The Bengals of late have been better defensively, but when you talk about stopping a running game, you guys have a big number that Bengals fans probably should go ahead and earmuff it.
Yeah, it's concerning. They lead the NFL with 115 missed tackles defensively, highest missed tackle rate as well, 15% of their tackle attempts this season they've missed. That's just awful. You know, the league leaders are in the 8s and 9 percentages, so that's just, you know, 1 out of every 10. That's just bad. That's not good. That's not going to, especially going up against a guy like Le'Veon Bell. They basically give him a ton of room to work. They give him let him freestyle more than any other running back in the league that I've seen. And basically with the scheme, what they do is they're putting him one-on-one with linebackers. That's going to be concerning for the Bengals.
It really will. It'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. Of course, Sunday, 1 o'clock now at Paul Brown Stadium. Bengals-Steelers reuniting that fierce rivalry from the playoff game all the way back in January. We will have more reaction from that and continue to look forward to the rest of the season. So we do every single week here with Pro Football Focus down here on Main Street over the Rhine. So we'll talk to you next week. First off, welcome back to the booth, I guess.
Yeah, right.
How much time outside of your family, like, is anybody come close to spending as much time together as you guys do with each other?
During the season, it's pretty extensive. Yeah.
Thank God I like you.
I know. Thank God we're buds, right?
Yeah. It's Pals. Actually, there's a famous saying that goes back to Kurt Gowdy. Now, this is, he said it in the baseball season. It's probably even more true in baseball, but long season, small booth. Yeah. So right. That describes some broadcasting relationships, but right. This guy's the best.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, you come in 6 years ago and, you know, you got to develop chemistry in a hurry, especially when you're doing all these shows and everything. I mean, what was the maybe the easiest part of it, and what was maybe the more challenging thing that took a little bit longer to develop for you guys to get to where you're at now?
You know, I remember doing the very first game And when the game was over, I'm like, that was easy. That was good. And I went into it with to me, the big word in my sports activities was always trust. Trust your teammates, trust your coaches, trust the process, you know, and trusted the guy. You know, I knew he was a pro, and, you know, I knew it would be fun doing games with him. And that first game, I'm like, this is going to work. You know, I just had total trust in what was going to happen.
I remember that first game, too. It was a 34-3 loss to the Lions in the preseason opener, Andy Dalton's first game.
He got smoked by Sue, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember it for a different reason, actually. All of the things that Lapp said apply, but I remember getting on the bus after the game going to the airport, and I'm like, man, that was awesome. That was so much fun doing an NFL game on the radio. Then I'm looking around at the other dudes on the bus, and they're looking down like, this is going to be a long year. So thankfully it didn't play out that way.
What, you know, you talk about trust and the keys to chemistry in the booth. Is there a different key to chemistry in the booth compared to on a show like Game Plan or a show like Pep Rally or any of the millions of things you guys do over the course of a season that's not on game day? Is there a different important element to the chemistry there as opposed to what it is on a game day in the booth?
It's different in the fact that, you know, instead of watching an event and just reacting and commenting to that, kind of creating more so. And, you know, Dan's really good at getting all kinds of voices involved, you know, and you know, putting segments together. And I just think, you know, it's more of a, I don't know, you're producing, in a sense, producing a show rather than, you know, just observing and reacting. You're actually putting something together for other people's entertainment. So it's different. But again, the trust in the process and trust in the partners is the biggest part of it for me.
Yeah, more challenging to the chemistry for you guys. Is it a harder thing to do, you think, or is the game because the game is just easy to sit back?
It's not any different for me, largely because I am like the audience. I'm learning something from him on both of those shows, whether it's a live game or whether it's one of the shows we do during the week. I'm a sponge. And, you know, even after nearly six full years now of doing games, every single game we do, every single show we do, I learn something, which is great. It's exactly what you want.
Yeah. What, one of my favorite stories is back when Chad and Carson were trying to learn to play together, and they took a drive up to Indy.
Indy, yep.
Right? And then they learned about the unspoken language. Have you guys ever gone and watched others in the booth? Or is there a truly unspoken language, though, between you guys, where it is now a look or something like that that really sets everything forward for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times I can almost, besides the play, I mean, Dan does a great job of describing the play, but when we have time to banter at all, I mean, I can almost think that I have an idea what path he might want to go down even before actually trying to go there. So I think you do start to learn, you know, what makes a guy tick and what a guy might think is funny or what a guy might want to react to or things like that. So I sometimes feel like I have a good idea where we're headed, you know, whether it's during the game or even more importantly, doing the show. Is that part of it?
Yeah, I think that's true. We have similar senses of humor. We're roughly the same age.
Thank you.
We both went to Syracuse University. So, you know, we entertain each other, I think, and hopefully that comes through in the stuff that we do on air.
Well, that's the big part of it, isn't it? Is you put on something that's entertaining to you guys, and then you assume that the audience will find it equally entertaining. That's the point, right?
I've always said that's really the key to broadcasting. You can't try to do what you think the audience wants to hear. You can't try to copy somebody else. You have to trust your own instincts, do what you think would be interesting and informative, and like you said, hope that the audience agrees. That's really the only way to approach it.
And the thing working with Dan is he's you know, very bright. So to me, it's like I can go anywhere because it's not going to be like, huh? What the heck are you talking about? You know, I mean, he's well-read, bright, you know, understands everything. So it's feel like, you know, the landscape is the entire earth rather than just one little beach, you know.
But only one of us got accepted to Harvard.
Yeah, right.
And it wasn't this guy. Exactly. So we know who the bright one is.
Yeah, right.
I was joking with Lapp the other day after your guys' Microsoft event that it's like the Lapp jukebox. You just go in and you plug in 15 and it cycles down and just spits out the... Do you have... What's A1? What's A1 if you're in your lap jukebox? Is there one that you...
I really like the Dave Lapham concussion story. That is probably A1 on my Dave Lapham jukebox. I laugh every single time when we hit the punchline where the trainer at the time has told him to get up every hour after suffering a serious concussion, and Lap goes, "Get up every hour? That would, you know, if I don't get up every hour, that would not be good." Right. That's A1 on my jukebox.
I mean, how aware are you of, do you feel like you know every story? Because, I mean, you've got so many, and I feel like we always hear a new one, but you guys are all constantly bringing them out. Are you still learning new, like, wow, I can't believe it. As much time as we spend together, as many shows as we do, I've never heard that one.
It's a deep well. I've still got the ladle. We're digging into that deep well, and he never disappoints. You know, one of the things we started doing from the very beginning on the Wednesday night show was ending it with the last lap, and we started doing it to give me time to get from one place that I needed to be to the other. So we could tape that segment in advance.
Right.
It would end the show, and that gave me like 7 or 8 minutes to hop in my car and get to a UC coaches show. So the last lap is essentially stories from his playing or broadcasting career tied to that week's opponent. Well, here we are, almost 6 full years in, and we're still digging into that well and coming up with great new stuff. So, I mean, thankfully, he has an unbelievable memory for 40 years of Bengals history.
Yeah, and exposed to a lot of different things, you know. That's why I was lucky about the one when we played Miami this year, the onside punt, when Don Shula executed an onside punt after a safety. Now, I wasn't aware. It's a free kick, so you can kick off or punt. And, you know, he decided everybody punts it away. Onside punt, 10 yards. Recovers and gets the ball back. That's why he's Don Shula.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so you're exposed to so many different things over that time frame. So it's a lot of fun.
That's C6 on the jukebox. The Shula onside punt.
Right.
I want to see video of that. I'm going to contact NFL Films and see if they've got the onside punt.
I'm sure they've got it. So when I talked to Mike, he mentioned the phrase Marty and Joe. And he was sure to say there's a reverence there with them, clearly, but you guys developing into that. Do you view yourself that way? Do you have to get into this business with that as the goal, to be an institution? Or do you just, let's just do this game and do our thing and hope the best comes out of it? How does something like that frame you guys?
Yeah, I never really even think about, you know, getting into it and how long you've been in it or whatever. I just feel like, you know, I'm just so lucky that avocation and vocation are the same thing, you know. And it's like, man, what a blessed situation I've been in, to be able to play, you know. As a kid, you dream about playing, and then able to play, and then able to broadcast afterwards, which is, you know, another thing that a lot of people love to do. But to me, like Dan said, it's having fun, you know. It's like even if you had a job that you always wanted, but for whatever reason, the environment, your partner, whatever it was, wasn't, and you white knuckled driving there saying, man, shouldn't be like that. I mean, I couldn't imagine that. So the fun factor to me is a big part of it, because, I mean, everybody in the world would want to do what we're doing. It's a game, and we're talking about a football game. Man, it can't be any better than that, you know?
Sit close to the 50, talk for 3 hours, and they give you a check at the end of the day.
That dog will hunt, man.
It's a great way to make a living.
That dog will hunt.
And getting back to your original question, I'm not Marty. I will never be Marty, but I think of him as Joe.
I don't know.
You know, 41 years of Bengals history, 10 as a player, 31 as a broadcaster. He is on the Mount Rushmore of Bengals history. I feel that way. I think, you know, some people have referred to him as Mr. Bengals. And I think there's some truth to that. I mean, nobody has been associated with this franchise longer other than the Brown family than Dave Lapham.
Well, fortunate as we all are, fortunate enough to know both of those guys. And, you know, for as great as they are at what they do, man, just quality human being. And Joe Nuxhall, I don't think there was a sweeter human being than Joe Nuxhall. So anytime anybody says, you know, oh, man, you're the Joe Nuxhall, I don't think of it as the broadcast. To me, I'm automatically like, man, when I think of Joe Nuxhall, I think, what an unbelievable guy, you know. So he's a special dude.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right.
I appreciate your time.
You bet.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
As always. Pleasure as always. I appreciate it.
All right, welcome to Beyond the Stripes by JosephAuto.com. So happy to be here at the Hoffer House in Newport. Ladies and gentlemen, it's here for our guest tonight, Drake Kirkpatrick. Dre tied for the team lead with 3 picks this year. How many do you feel like you should have? You've been close on a few more.
Maybe 3 more.
Maybe 3 more?
Yeah.
Is that one of the most frustrating? Because you live for that. I mean, you live for the moment where you, exactly, where you get the pick. Is that? It's great that you break up a pass, but is it one of the most frustrating moments of playing cornerback? Is when you feel like you had one, you do everything to get in position, but you can't pull it in at the last second.
Ooh, yeah, man. That's one of the stressfulest things for a cornerback, because you always want to say you got the best hands on the field, and when you drop one, you got to go back to AJ and guys like that always make great catches. You know, they always trying to tell you get on the jug machine, and you know, you kind of lose a little bit of respect in there as far as the hand talking.
A little relief to get the picks back going last year, because last year I know you were frustrated that you weren't able to get that element of your game going, but this year you've been able to kind of make a few and get that momentum.
Yeah, you know, and obviously I was going through a lot of injuries last year, as far as the wrists, my shoulder, you know, things like that. So for me to go out there and make plays now, body feeling good, body feeling healthy, you know, I feel pretty good about things. Yeah.
But isn't the ultimate for a cornerback not to get a lot of picks because nobody's thrown to your side of the field?
I mean, that's the frustrating part about it. You know, at the end of the day, you want to have the opportunity that other guys have, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm doing my job, you know, and that's a great sign of it.
How many corners in the league right now do you think are better than you are?
None.
There you go.
All right,
gotta have confidence.
I didn't answer that question.
I know it's not fair to ask you during a regular season, but I know the contract stuff is going to get brought up. Why do you want to return to Cincinnati next year?
At the end of the day, you know, they took off a great opportunity to take a chance on me. You know, I had a little history, a little background. You know, it wasn't always green on the other side when I was coming out, and they took a chance on me. And, you know, I haven't been in any trouble. So at the end of the day, I feel like it kind of paid off for the both of us, and it was a great organization. They took care of me. They taught me the game. They just didn't throw me in there and let me just flop. You know, they actually took their time, let me develop, and develop into the corner I am today.
So you appreciate that, kind of sitting out, developing to get in your starter spot.
Yeah, man. It's nothing like the fans, though. You know, I've grown to have a great relationship with certain fans. You know, they be here every week through thick and thin, through the highs and our lows. So, you know, it'd be hard for me not to want to come back here.
What is, you know, earlier in the year, when it came to Josh Norman specifically, people wondered how about the corners who travel with their guy, the corners who play half a field, depending on the defense. I know you guys rarely tail a player. What would you, if you could just be D coordinator for a day, what would you like to do with an Antonio Brown or one of these top receivers in that sort of situation?
At the end of the day, you know, as far as the Bengals, which is a plus, that we have 2 good corners. You know, I'm not going to not throw Adam in there. Adam, I feel like he's a great veteran. He's taught me the game a lot, especially with some other guys. But at the end of the day, I love to follow, but I also love to know I got somebody on the other side that's reliable.
Lindsay kind of touched on the contract thing. Just about playing this season, I mean, for a player, there's just no year with more urgency or intensity than the first contract year. I mean, you just can't deny it. Yeah. Has it felt different for you, and have you been able to pretty easily block that stuff out and just try to go out, play football, do your thing, and not worry about that stuff?
Oh, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, I got a great support system, you know, whereas my coach, my agent, my dad, my girlfriend, you know, they always just tell me, like, at the end of the day, you got another week. It's another game. And when that time comes, I feel like it all take care of itself. You know, and I respect AJ a lot. I learned a lot from his process. He didn't rarely talk about it. At the end of the day, it's just money. This is a game that we all love. We grew up as kids wanting to play it. And, you know, I feel like it's cherished more than money. So that's why I just kind of block the noise.
Are you anxious or curious
or nervous about what will happen when the off season starts rolling is to see what
scared.
Will
happen.
Scared?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why are you scared?
Your life changed, you know. At the end of the day, you gotta face reality. It's a life changing experience. And at the end of the day, you may move on. I met my girlfriend in Cincinnati, her whole family here. I've grown to call this home. I don't even go home in the off season no more. I stay here. You know, so it just that's the scary part about it.
Yeah.
Well, you give Mike Brown a hometown discount, I'm sure he'd take you up. I think that could be worked out.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I still have people in place for those things, too.
What wide receivers in the league right now that you have to go against do you truly respect?
Antonio Brown. I never played against Dez besides the one time I was anxious to get him this time. I couldn't get him. So he's still on my list. Odell Beckham. That's a guy that there's a lot of history between me and him. I mean, a lot of history, you know, and a lot of trash talking. And for me to go out there, you know, that was the first time we really embraced each other was after this, the Monday night game, yeah. Where, you know, the respect was on both sides was just mutual.
Do you learn as a corner? Do you grow as a corner by going against guys like Antonio Brown? Do they help you, in effect, get better at what you do?
I mean, the proof is in the pudding. You know, if you look at it from when I played him the first time to now, it's a totally different ball game. You know, at the end of the day, he had to turn me over and whoop me on the backside a few times for me to get it. But, you know, that's a who better to do it than him? Yeah. You know, I learned from it.
Dre, since you arrived in Cincinnati, you're always one of those guys who likes to have a little fun, maybe dancing a little at practice, but you're positive. And I think I saw a tweet after the Eagles win, and you were one of those positive guys on Twitter, excited to get the win, snap the losing streak, and someone tweeted you, you didn't win the Super Bowl, you only have 4 wins on the season. You replied back and you said, we're having fun, we're allowed to have fun, something like that. Does social media ever get to you? Do you ever really want to say something else back to some of these people?
Of course. but at the end of the day, you got to have a sense of humor. You got to know that, you know, some people that they just want to take aim and take shots just to get a response. And when you know, the best way I was taught, you kill it with kindness, you know, or you just kill them with how you really feel about it, you know. And it ain't got to be a negative way. It can be turn their negative situation into a positive. Like you just said, it was a positive ending because that's what you've seen.
How does these 2 wins help you for a game like Pittsburgh?
At the end of the day, build your confidence, build your momentum, having guys believe in each other, guys having fun again. You know, because we had the most fun these last 2 games all year. And that's what it's all about, having fun. And we getting back to playing how we used to play. You know, but at the end of the day, we playing smarter. Not too many personal fouls. You know, guys still playing on that edge. But, you know, it's all about playing smart with it now.
Are you surprised it took this long? I mean, you guys, since the bye, I think, giving up 16 points a game, which is better than last year even. But it took 8 games, I guess, to kind of flip. Are you surprised, now that you're looking back at it, knowing how you've played the last 4, kind of wondering why did it take us to this point, I guess, for that to click?
Chemistry. You know, at the end of the day, like I said, we're just not starting to have fun. Guys have to learn how to play with each other. Even though you got guys out there that play with each other since I've been here, you know, they playing a little different now because, you know, it may be something that's small, as in a detail that, hey, maybe this might work. Let's try this route, and you know that's how it's going. You know, I could be in a room with somebody all day. I may not say nothing to them for a whole year, but it may be one little thing that they do that'll trigger. Oh, you know, start a conversation or spark up anything. So I feel like the chemistry is growing strong. But is it too late? We don't know. You know, at the end of the day. Like I said, we're just going to continue to go out there and just continue to try to put wins together.
It had to kill you not to really be able to let loose and feel like you could comfortably have fun during the middle of the season whenever it was going. I mean, it just had to have been brutal. Was there almost like an uncomfortable level like, all right, maybe I shouldn't joke today even though it's only Tuesday or Wednesday because we haven't won since, you know, September 29th or whatever?
Yeah, man, it was lost for words every day. You know, I hated it. You know, I'm not scared to talk about it. I hated it.
Yeah.
You know, it did something to me. I hate losing. I go home, I don't talk. It just bothers me. I hate losing. That's why I play how I play. You know, because if I lose, it bothers me no matter what. And for me, not that takes me away from being me, because now I feel like a loser. You know?
He's definitely being himself right now. Great to have Dre Kirkpatrick with us. Let's hear it for Dre for joining us up here, BTS.